same, you know, artistic delivery that I like to provide. You know, I've asked the city attorney now to cast all my votes and ask all my questions there, so we'll be talking to your representative during the conference. Are you ready?
Very good. Carla, you ready?
Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session on February 28th, 2018, of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Udaly?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here.
Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during the City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for Communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of the testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Well done. Carla, could you please read the first item for today?
Yes. Item 203. Accept the report, A Plan for Preserving and Expanding Affordable Art Space in Portland, and instruct Bureau staff to examine the recommendations for adoption.
So, colleagues, before I send this over to Commissioner Fish, I just want to state that we're delighted to have people here today to testify on this resolution. It is a very important resolution, and I don't want anybody to believe otherwise. However, I also want to acknowledge that we have the relocation ordinance coming up after this, and that is going to engender a lot of public testimony. So we have an hour reserved for this item, so I would like people, depending upon how many people we have signed up to testify on this resolution, I'd like you to start thinking about how you could get your talking points into 2 minutes instead of three while the presentation is unfolding. And thank you for your understanding on that. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. I'm really excited to be here today and to be part of a council that's going to make a bold and dramatic statement about the value of arts in our community. In the 5 weeks since we held a work session on our recommendations about affordable creative spaces, we have received an enormous amount of support and requests from the community. My office has put together a change memo that has been circulated to each of the offices, council offices, and there are copies available for the public here as well. I'm going to turn it over to Jamie Dumphy on my team to walk us through what's in the memo, and we have a couple of panels. We'll take some testimony, and then it's my hope that we will vote on the resolution. Jamie?
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Jamie Dumphy. I'm a Senior Policy Director for Commissioner Nick Fish. As has been said, we have a very full house this afternoon with people who are far more interesting to hear from than me, so I'm going to be very brief. Included in your packets in front of you is a copy of a change memo from Commissioner Fish that reflects the important feedback we received since our work session on January 19th. This memo clarifies the intent of certain recommendations and gives instruction to city staff to begin implementation. Today's resolution is asking you to do two separate actions. First, you'll be formally accepting the report that is before you. This report remains unchanged since you last saw it in January. Since these recommendations were agreed upon by internal and external stakeholders who were willing to put their names on it, our intent is to honor that endorsement and leave the report unchanged. So the second part of your action this afternoon will be to approve the recommendations in the change memo and in the resolution, which pertain to how these will be implemented and which items will not be pursued at this time. The first step on all of these recommendations is to have city staff work directly with the offices of their respective commissioners in charge to review and begin working on any applicable recommendations. The second is that when a recommendation is ready for implementation, it's brought back to City Council on the regular agenda for approval. This includes programmatic changes, administrative rules, or changes to city code. The remaining nine steps outlined in the change memo are intended to clarify either the intent of a recommendation or correct a technical aspect about how implementation will be more effective. Commissioner Fritz, based on your feedback, I'd like to point out that we are not going to be pursuing recommendation number nine, which was the idea around exempting creative space from FAR or height. It's never my intent to have a city commissioner run from the room.
Thank you.
And lastly, I'd like to make it explicitly clear that this report serves as ideal recommendations taken in a vacuum. In a perfect world, these recommendations could be implemented as written, but we fully recognize that that's not realistic and that each of these recommendations will need to be tailored to fit into existing bureaus and programs throughout the city. Our intention is to remain flexible, working toward a common goal with the details to be worked out by bureau staff, city council, and the general public. For example, within the Bureau of Development Services, there's a clear need for a concierge service for a range of permit seekers, from small businesses to nonprofits and, yes, artists. We want to be intentional about supporting each of these groups with scarce public dollars. So Commissioner Udaly's plan to create a small business liaison that also serves arts groups is considered an enormous win in this effort. We'll be looking for opportunities beyond the recommendations in this report that work toward the same goal. So if anyone in the public has ideas that fit this framework, please reach out. And lastly, I'd like to thank my City Hall colleagues, Pollyann Faith Burge, Lisa Taylor, Amira Streeter, and Jennifer Arguinzoni for your partnership on this effort. And thank you, City Council, for acknowledging these challenges that our community is facing and for working to find solutions. This afternoon, I have three panels of invited testimony and a very full room filled with enthusiastic art supporters, so this will be the conclusion of my presentation. I'd like to invite our first panel of testimony. It's Suba, I can't pronounce your last name, I'm sorry.
Ganasan,
the city's new creative laureate, Brian Rogers, executive director from the Oregon Arts Commission, and Jeff Hawthorne, interim executive director at RAC. They'll be followed by Ross McKean of the Oregon Children's Theater, who will be reading testimony from Stan Pankin, who was on our panel of external stakeholders. Stan is also the former chair of the Arts Oversight Committee, and this council proclaimed February 15, 2017, as Stan Pankin Day in Portland. Andre Middleton, the executive director of Friends of Noise and another member of our external stakeholder group for this report. And the third person on the second panel is Charlene Zeidel of the Zeidel Corporation. And our last panel will be Damaris Webb, co-founder of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, and Carlos Chavez, the executive director of Morpheus Youth Project.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Thanks for all your great work. Let's welcome the first panel up. And colleagues, as they're getting seated, Suba, our creative laureate, I think is off to a great start. She already has her own Facebook page. She's already organized her own festival with one of our key nonprofit partners. What's left to do this year? I mean, you're a... congratulations on all the work you've done and you will do, and thank you all for joining us. Jeff, you want to kick us off?
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Commissioners. My name is Jeff Hawthorne. I am the Interim Executive Director for the Regional Arts and Culture Council, your stewards for the city's investments in the arts. I want to start briefly by saying what a pleasure it has been to work with Jamie Dunphy, Pollyann Burge, Amira Streeter, Jennifer Arguinzoni, and Lisa Taylor from your staffs. They are truly fantastic, and I really appreciate their collaborative spirit in this process. It has been challenging for us at RAC to listen to the plight of artists and arts organizations over the years, with precious few resources to respond to a growing emergency. Art spaces are disappearing in front of our very eyes, artists are being priced out of their neighborhoods, and creatives are struggling to live in a city that they helped define. Thanks to them, Portland enjoys a strong reputation as a center of creativity and innovation. In early 2017, we all agreed that the city itself was in the best position to take the lead and collaborate with bureaus to identify changes that can make a real difference for artists who struggle to remain in Portland. We view this report as a wonderful start with some great recommendations that we stand ready to implement with you in the months and years ahead. From our point of view, low-hanging fruit includes the creation of an online searchable database of art spaces, because RAC conducted a comprehensive venues inventory in 2010, and local arts advocates have already updated that open-source inventory and built a starter database in partnership with Fractured Atlas out of New York. With adequate funding, RAC could work with them and the city's IT department to expand this database, promote it to local artists, and keep it up to date. We also support greater intentionality in decoupling percent for art projects from the originating construction site so as to create more public art in East Portland and other underserved neighborhoods in the city. This is something that RAC has already started doing, but I think it's a very good idea to codify this as a deliberate strategy. We also applaud Commissioner Udaly for reinstating a concierge at BDS, and the arts community will be encouraged to hear that several city bureaus are already starting to work to revamp their permitting processes to work better for everyone in Portland. We love the talk about filling empty spaces with artists temporarily, and we'd love to take this conversation to the next level by partnering with you and Prosper Portland to acquire buildings that could be held permanently as flexible spaces for ongoing arts programming like they do in Chicago. Going forward, RAC is well positioned to convene the arts community and continue the conversation about what it means to live and make a living in the arts in Portland. We will collect even more good ideas in the months ahead and will remain in close contact with you and Commissioner Fish to share other smart approaches and promising practices. But let's be clear, a lot of the hard work is still to come, and some of these solutions will require investment. In the meantime, RAC intends to hold the line by supporting artists through grants, public art commissions, professional development opportunities, and more. I'd also like to remind you that at one time, the city used to invest $200,000 a year to help RAC respond to special emergencies as they arise. For example, helping an arts organization get back on its feet when it loses its facility to development, flood, or fire. Should you ever want to reinvest in something like that again, you know where to find us. Commissioner Fish, thank you so much for your leadership on this and for being our liaison to the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And I appreciate all of you for having this conversation with the arts community today. I also appreciate your understanding that Portland would not be Portland without the artists and creatives who inhabit this special place. Artists help power our economy, enhance our children's education, and connect us to a more equitable future. Local artists are a vital resource for solving very real problems here at the city, and we rely on them to keep Portland healthy and whole. For all of these reasons, I recommend that you accept this report and work with us at RAC to pursue the recommendations within. Thank you.
Jeff, I want to also publicly acknowledge that Eloise Damrosch is with us, your predecessor, longtime executive director at RAC. Eloise, thank you for being here. And Jeff, you have done an outstanding job as the interim executive director, and we haven't missed a beat. So thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Suba.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners, and all present at City Council. Thank you for providing much-needed visibility for the artistic and creative community of Portland, a community that relentlessly continues to serve as a key factor in our city for tourism, relocation, economic growth, and cultural vibrance. I'm an artist, arts administrator, instigator, activist, woman of color, recent immigrant, and currently creative laureate of Portland. And I would like to offer my thoughts on four of the ideas recommended in the document. Much of my statement is a result of many conversations I have had with artists and art makers. The population that this affordable art space document is ultimately seeking to serve. I'll start with point number 18, or idea 18, culturally specific creative space development. This is very much in alignment with what diverse, multicultural, professional artists are seeking in this city. More creative spaces where artists of color can thrive and make work on their terms and elevate their stories. Idea 6, explore options to incentivize creative space landlords. This is a truly popular idea as this creates a sense of possible home for artists and art makers. The concern, of course, is length of lease, conditions of the space. There's also a question of the type of art that gets space through this idea. Dancers and theater artists typically need more space than musicians and 2 or 3D artists. So more square footage is needed for certain artistic practices. How will the city help provide equitable incentives so that all artistic forms can benefit from this idea? Idea number 3. Creative space certification. It's interesting to artists, especially newcomers, who see this as a list that introduces them to the artscape of the city. The questions raised are about criteria for space certification, and if certification could create a side effect of hierarchy in the venue landscape of Portland, and if that could lead to loss of revenue for non-certified venues. And lastly, idea number 1, concierge at City Hall. Artists and art makers want to be assured that this paid position at the city level is for someone who will advocate and go to bat for them, someone who knows what it means to be an independent artist trying to make a living in this city, someone empowered to help cut the red tape. What artists are afraid of is someone who will pull out a map that shows all the stops to the fire marshal, noise ordinance, PDC, OLCC, etc., etc. But we want someone who can streamline bureau needs and advocate for artists. One point that is outside of the current recommendations comes specifically from the disability arts community. There's concern that there's a lack of language around art spaces that are intersectional and accessible. In particular, it was encouraged for the document to mention ADA Title I or II. Title I addresses accessible places for performers and artists, and Title II addresses access for audiences and public. Finally, my experience as an artist and arts administrator in Portland for the last 10 years is that there are organizations, venue managers, artistic directors, and artists who have been on a shoestring budget creating some version of several of the recommendations proposed in this document. While the city is embarking on implementing new programming, I hope that the city can provide visibility for all these different individuals and entities who have been tirelessly doing the work thus far in each of their communities to the best of their ability. Recognition and fiscal assistance from granting entities connected to the city are also great ways to honor the work that has been done thus far. As the Creative Laureate, I'm happy to receive information from our city's artists and arts organizations so that I can bring a comprehensive list to the city. I'm committed to make sure that the city that works can be more creative as the city that works together.
Super, well said. Could you remind us where we can find you on Facebook?
Creative Laureate of Portland, but I even now have an email address.
Even better.
creative.laureate@portland.gov.
PortlandOregon.gov.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that second part yet. creative.laureate@portlandoregon.gov. Thank you.
Bravo. Thank you very much. And now we're honored to turn to Brian Rogers, the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish and Mayor and the rest of the Commission. For the record, my name is Brian Rogers, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. We're two state agencies that are housed within Business Oregon, the state's Economic Development Department, and we fund arts and culture activities all across the state in a number of different programs and services, including operating support, specific projects, and individual artist support. We also block fund every county and federally recognized tribe to make local grants in their community. The value and importance of the value and importance Americans have for the creative expression is very high. 82% of Americans believe arts and culture are important to local businesses and the economy. 87% of Americans believe that the arts and culture are important to the quality of life. In a recent American for the Arts and Economic Impact study, the following data was presented. The impact of the nonprofit arts and cultural industry in Oregon is $687 million. 48% of that economic impact comes from Portland, for a total impact of $330 million. Across the state, nonprofit arts and cultural organizations support 22,299 jobs, and 52% of those jobs are in the Portland metro area, for a total FTE support of 11,505 jobs. Attendance across the state to arts and cultural organizations is around $9.9 million. And 47% of those people, or 4.6 million, attend events in the Portland metro. Attendees spend an average of $23 per person per event, excluding the cost of admission. The improvement to quality of life is also evident by arts and cultural programs and services, in addition to creating a sense of place through arts organizations, public art projects, events, and festivals, and the presence of artists living and working and presenting their work in a community. We recognize that this density of the creative community encourages other businesses, including restaurants. More and more cities and community leaders recognize the economic impact and community well-being and livability the arts and culture provide. Citizens are asking for increased arts and cultural events and support and promotion of the artists. Artists are the core to creative communities or districts, often have a difficult time in acquiring space or retaining the space they have. Oftentimes, the Soho effect comes into play, where artists and arts organizations are priced out of the very community or neighborhood they help build and make vibrant. And without affordable space, artists and arts organizations have no choice but to leave the very communities they help revitalize and make desirable. Some communities across the country have taken active measures to ensure that artists and arts organizations are welcomed and have the resources to maintain residence and presence in the community. These communities, just like Portland, know the importance of supporting the creative industry and its growth. For example, the Three River Art District in Asheville, North Carolina, consists of a wide array of artists and working studios and 22 renovated buildings in the former industrial area on a mile-long stretch of the French Broad River. The Paducah, Kentucky Artist Relocation Program attracted working artists of all types to participate in the city's creative energy and reside in the oldest residential neighborhood. When the arts were being cut, Paducah fostered an environment where artists and the arts could flourish by offering properties at minimal cost to become part of the true art enclave. Paducah Bank has invested over $30 million in artists restoring their community. Recently, we have begun, the Arts Commission, the Cultural Trust, administering the Creative Resource Economic Fund, which is funded by the legislature, and support capital and renovation projects around the state. In the current fiscal year, we are administering $4.1 million in state funds for capital construction. And in the Portland area, projects this year include the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, and PICA received a $100,000 grant, and the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, APANO, received a $300,000 grant. Both grants are for their new space renovation, including APANO's ground floor art gallery. While this funding and funding like this from other sources is vital, it does not address the ever-expanding need for affordable space for artists and arts organizations. Incentives and direct services are needed to encourage artists and organizations to stay, grow, and continue to make Portland a vibrant city it is. This proposal, Affordable Art Space in Portland, provides a very solid platform to address the very real issues facing the city. The proposal provides a very clear outline of 24 ideas, now 23, that will help advance the city's creative community, thereby increasing the livability and growth of the economy. This type of proposal is rare across the country. I applaud the effort and thoughtfulness. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Brian, thank you very much for joining us. Two things. Thank you for making it so easy to give to the Cultural Trust, and I think the partnership with the Willamette Week Give Guide took it to the next level.
Yep.
For those of us who are procrastinators, to give to arts organizations, then it tells you how much you can do as a match, so that's fantastic. And thank you for reminding us that overwhelmingly Americans support the arts. You wouldn't know that from the president's proposed budget,
right,
which proposes to zero out public funding for the arts. But it's good to be reminded about how robustly we support the arts in this country.
Exactly.
Thank you, all three. Colleagues, the next panel is Ross McKean of the Oregon Children's Theater, Andre Middleton, Executive Director of Friends of Noise. Andre, we made appointments this morning to the Noise Oversight Board, so this has a nice little symmetry. Their job is to keep the noise down. Your job is to make as much as possible. And we have Charlene Zeidel of the Zeidel Corporation, and we welcome all three of you. Ross, would you like to kick it off?
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Ross McKean. I'm the Managing Director of Oregon Children's Theater. We're a nonprofit performing arts company that reaches over 120,000 children and families in any given year, and we're proud of the work we do. I'm actually here today standing in for Stan Penkin, who's a community and arts advocate who you know and who worked on this report as one of the stakeholders. I'm standing in for him. I will watch the time and take away my page of talking about me, which those of you who know me will know what a loss that is for me. So let me read Stan's, and if I get to the end and have some time, I'll plug a show we're doing. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, in recent years, Portland has grown dramatically as a hub for arts and culture. While it is not New York, Portland has become a vibrant center for artists, theater, dance, music, makers, and much more. The arts speak to the heart and soul of Portland's culture and are something we must nurture and cherish. But in this era of rising rents and development focused largely on high-paying tech and creative users and our most affluent residents, we lack affordable artist housing, rehearsal and performance venues, and studio space. Additionally, it is difficult for professionals to develop arts-related careers in our city, so we often lose the rising stars of arts administration to cities such as San Francisco, Chicago, New York, or elsewhere. Lastly, there is inadequate acknowledgement of the significant economic impact of arts and culture and of its central role in making Portland attractive to high-quality employers and the next generation of those who will define and shape our amazing city. According to a study by the Urban Land Institute, Portland is at a crossroads, particularly as it regards the evolution and transformation of the Central East Side Industrial District. If our artistic and maker communities are priced out of the central city, we risk losing some of the essential ingredients that enhance the fabric and spirit of our city. Smaller and culturally specific arts groups, in particular, struggle to find office and performance space as property values grow and as landlords raise rents to unaffordable levels or redevelop their properties for other uses. Portland must protect this vital community. Finding ways to preserve and enhance with the many tools and methods available to do so, public-private partnerships, land banking, community investment trusts, repurposing existing and/or surplus assets, development of mixed-use urban projects, integrating subsidized and market-rate components in the same project, and creating districts or campuses are all possibilities that must be fully explored. Now is the time for our leaders and stakeholders across the city to come together and create a cohesive, ambitious, long-term strategy for securing a place for the artistic and maker communities. The 24 ideas for preserving and expanding affordable art space presented today are a much-needed start in recognizing our urgent need to act and to act quickly. Some of these ideas could be implemented relatively quickly, and others will understandably take some time. Today is the day to get started. Time is running out. Many thanks to Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Fish, and Commissioner Udaly for initiating this arts affordability effort, and a most special thanks to Jamie Dunphy for his diligent efforts in leading the charge. On behalf of Oregon Children's Theater, I extend an invitation to attend our opening this weekend or any time during our run of a fabulous play called And in This Corner, Cassius Clay. It's a story of a young Cassius Clay before he stepped into his role as Muhammad Ali and his charge for social justice. It's an important and wonderful story, and we're proud to be presenting it. Thank you.
Ross, thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Andre Middleton, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, your fellow city commissioners, and my name is Andre Middleton, and I'm the executive director of Friends of Noise. Friends of Noise was started about 2 years ago as an art organization with the desire to address the closing of several youth-centered creative spaces in the Portland metro region. Obviously, it's hard to cover the rising cost of rent for these creative age spaces if your revenues can't include alcohol sales. We have seen the joy, the sense of accomplishment, the growth of an all-ages community that supports each other, whether on stage or off. And thus, our mission has grown to include professional development, youth empowerment, workshops, support navigating the early steps in their entry into the music and entertainment industry. We have joined a constellation of stellar youth-focused organizations like Marrow, the August Wilson Red Door Project, the Kukatuna Children's African Dance Troupe, Morpheus Youth Project, World Stage Theater, Rock Row Camp for Girls, and D-Underground, just to name a few, that are providing access and instruction in creative self-expression and youth community engagement. Yet many of these organizations, as are we, are often space-threatened or actively searching for a home within the communities that we serve. These organizations are led by people that believe, as we do, as I'm sure many of you do, in the restorative and healing power of the arts. We live in a society and a system that has centered the arts on the privileged few that have had the means to share their stories, their history, and their music through the arts. I was born in New York City, and I can attest firsthand to the impact that access to housing and arts and creative spaces can have on a region. From my neighborhood in Brooklyn, it was an hour and a half each way via public transportation to see a show in Manhattan that really told stories that reflected me and my community. From my neighborhood in Brooklyn, there were housing projects that stretched for blocks in many directions that were so focused on providing the minimum requirement for housing that they overlooked and failed to save or create spaces to build the community soul through the arts. So as we wrestle with the growth and upheaval in our region, I'd like to add my voice to the chorus of those that are advocating for comprehensive solutions to the issues that we seek to address some of the fundamental facets that make our city livable, no matter what one's economy may, or, I'm sorry, what one's income bracket may be. Artists like the Resistance Crew, Ashley Williams, Esperanza Spalding grew up in an arts-rich environment that we are at risk of losing. The Nikes, the eBays, the We Out Here magazines are strengthened by having a diverse pool of homegrown creatives to draw from. So I fully support the resolution before City Council today. My many thanks to Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fish, and their staffs for the leadership on this important issue regarding maintaining the livability in our city. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andre. And now up is Charlene Zeidel of the Zeidel Corporation. And Charlene has not been shy about expressing a vision for bringing arts to the South Waterfront neighborhood. And we're delighted to have you join us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and distinguished council members. My name is Charlene Zeidel, and I am here on behalf of the Zeidel family to testify in favor of the city's plan for preserving and expanding affordable art space in Portland. We are in complete agreement that the value of art in our city is undeniable. It's core to the fabric of our identity. And further, that we are facing a crisis as artists and art organizations are being priced out of the market. We applaud the council for taking steps to encourage continued conversations and ideas for new, innovative ways to maintain and grow the vibrant, diverse, creative economy that is so important to our city. As you know, we have completed the master planning process for the redevelopment of our 33 acres in South Waterfront that has been home to our industrial businesses for the last 90 years. Zeidel Yards will be a 5 million square foot mixed-use development consisting of residential, commercial, and retail spaces, as well as 10 acres of public space. One of the tenets of our family vision for the redevelopment of this site is the incorporation of arts and culture into the community. Unlike an arts district, which might include shops, galleries, restaurants, and bars, our vision includes the creation of an art ecosystem, which includes every component of the art cycle, from funding to housing to workspace, to performance space, to visual and literary arts. Because of the size of this project and the mixed-use nature of the development, we will have housing, we will have office space, we will have retail space, and we will have outdoor space to accommodate these various needs. Our goal is to have arts baked into the entire development, a part of the fabric that's so ingrained that one can't sense where it starts and where it stops. For example, an office building may house an anchor art organization, as well as an art collective, a space specifically designed to house multiple nonprofits that have chosen to work together within a single space. The ground floor retail space of an apartment building, where artists may choose to live and work, may be studio spaces operated by an art institution providing classes for its students and the community, but also being available for artists to rent. Conceivably, a portion of the repurposed barge building, located closest to the river, might house a flexible performance venue program 10 to 12 hours a day, with classes, exhibits, poetry readings, dance and theater performances, events, etc. We also see the opportunity to work with OHSU and OMSI in the creation of a world-class 77-acre outdoor walkable sculpture garden connected by the Tillicum Crossing. What an amazing feature this would be for our city. We are deeply engaged in conversations with the arts community, exploring the needs and innovative solutions to meeting these needs. We know we need to find a new business model for the arts. We are engaged in conversations with the business community, soliciting their input on how to approach these challenges. We are looking for ways to do things differently. We are extremely inspired and encouraged with the collaborative approach and enthusiasm we are finding amongst the people we are talking to. We believe the answers will come through partnerships, collaborations, and a new way of doing business. Our family looks forward to a positive and productive partnership with the city as we move forward on our vision for Zidell Yards.
Colleen, thank you very much. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Colleagues, last but not least, Damaris Webb, co-founder of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, and Carlos Chavez, executive director of the Morpheus Youth Project. We're delighted both of you could join us today. Ms. Webb, you want to kick us off?
Sure. Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Damaris Webb, and I am here to testify to City Council in my capacity as co-director of the Vanport Mosaic. We are a community-driven, artist-led nonprofit dedicated to sharing and preserving the underrepresented stories of the Pacific Northwest. Our work is that of telling stories with and not about communities. As such, I am required to be a convener. I work with individual artists, city agencies, arts and humanities organizations, and local businesses across multiple communities to bring together sustainable projects that engage the public in learning about local history and policies with an equity lens. This way of community building brings me to the intersections between access and equity and arts and activism time and time again. And I believe this is where cultural life grows to be civic life. We've heard today about the importance of Portland's creative economy and how it enriches every aspect of the fabric of our civic lives, attracting newcomers to our city and engaging long-term residents. I would like to take this opportunity to also reflect on how a community's identity and experience is tied to specific physical spaces and is impacted by city planning and legislation. When we choose to invest our resources, or where we choose to invest our resources, is equally important as how we allocate them. Historically underrepresented neighborhoods in the North and Northeast, the J District, and East Portland have rich and multi-lens perspectives to contribute to the dialogue and diversity of our City of Roses, yet are historically underfunded and lack quality art space where their voices can be heard. The city's commitment to equity and inclusion also means access to resources and opportunity. That is why I applaud the council's intention to directly address these inequities. Just as important as the creation of new affordable spaces for artists to live and create work is the importance of preservation of currently existing city arts landmarks. The city owns or manages several historic arts and community venues, such as the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, whose history as an arts hub, giving shelter and platform to several generations of our city's professional artists of color, is indisputable. The value and impact of the city's recent commitment to reopen the doors of this venue to a hoped-for sustainable future cannot be overstated. The stories the Vanport Mosaic has engaged in the past 3 years have been stories of communities that once thrived in the neighborhoods of North and Northeast Portland. And this year, we are excited to offer dozens of free or sliding scale events to the public that shine a light on the impact of the Lost City of Vanport, the building of the Coliseum, expansion of the freeway, and the failed Emmanuel Hospital expansion had on communities in Inner North and Northeast Portland. Now imagine the irony of not being able to present a screening of Priced Out, a new documentary on the recent gentrification of Albina, because as presenters, we had been literally priced out of the neighborhood, or prior affordable venues had been closed. Well-meaning individuals may suggest that we share these stories in the already well-established venues of downtown Portland, missing entirely the irony, again, of not being able to have your stories heard in your community, and disregarding the possible benefits of having a multidisciplinary and multicultural festival bring economic activity to your neighborhoods. Let us therefore applaud City Council for moving forward to find ways to expand equity and inclusion to all communities via the arts. Thank you.
Thank you so Thank much. You.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Mr. Chavez, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the time for you all to let me speak. My name is Carlos Chavez. I run an organization. I'm the executive director of Morpheus Youth Project, an arts and culturally responsive type of programming organization that primarily focuses our work in three strategic areas. One of them in the outer East Portland area, and within juvenile justice, the entry-level juvenile justice at Multnomah County Juvenile Detention, as well as at the state level, the Oregon Youth Authority, working with youth that are locked up primarily at McLaren Youth Corrections, the largest facility. I'm speaking on behalf of youth and on, you know, many of the marginalized communities who end up in areas, those three strategic areas that I'm speaking of. I can attest, like I said, I can attest to the very real struggle that these young people have to have access to arts opportunities and, in particular, space to host events to be involved and to have a place to kind of call their own. I'm often asked, you know, I do lots of presentations in different, you know, at schools and community events and what have you, and in particular, I work with a lot of youth who are gang affected or gang impacted, and folks are always asking me, you know, what is it that we can do, you know, to help these young people that are, you know, why is it that they're getting involved? And I, you know, the way that I respond to that is that, you know, these young people are attracted to these things because of certain elements. There's a certain element of family, a rite of passage. Ownership, respect. There's all these different elements that's built into these structures that the youth are attracted to. Well, in order for us to redirect them and get them involved in something that's more positive or more healthy for them, is that we need to create something that's equally attractive or more so that they can be involved in something that's meaningful. So the arts is where it's at. The arts, you know, encompasses all of the different areas that these young people are wanting and needing. And to have an arts space is a way to provide them with some real opportunity to grow and to become, you know, something much more positive in their communities, and to give them some opportunities to work, to learn, to explore, and to express themselves. So I want to, you know, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that I would like very much like to see diversity represented in this, and I was very pleased to see that that, you know, these elements that I'm talking about are things that have been mentioned in this resolution, and so I applaud you for that, and I thank you for putting this together, and I look forward to the opportunity for these young people to really have access to these arts based programs and opportunities in their community. So thank you.
Thank you both for joining us. So folks, we're now going to move to some public testimony. If someone has already said something that generally mirrors your view, we would encourage you to be...
Commissioner Fritz.
I have an amendment, Commissioner.
Okay, yep.
Thank you very much, everybody, for the presentation. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership of this project. When we had the work session, I raised some concerns about the proposals, the language in the recommendations about Portland Parks and Recreation. So I just want to clarify that this was the following amendment, and it would be added as a second, be it further resolved, right before the one about the Bureau of Development Services concierge service. And the proposed amendment would say, be it further resolved, Portland Parks and Recreation will consider ways to integrate recommendations in this report in its long-range planning efforts currently underway to shape future services across the park system.
I'm going to second the amendment.
Commissioner Fritz moves. Commissioner Fish seconds.
Consider it a friendly amendment.
Thank you. And so happily, we are at Portland Parks and Recreation looking at, we currently have a Parks 2020 vision plan, which is obviously 2020 is sneaking up on us. So it's really important to look at these things in the context of all 214 properties that Portland Parks and Recreation manages and holds in stewardship for everybody. Thanks Sue Pack, who is here today and who's been working at Damaris Webb, mentioned about the interstate firehouse. So we are very... concerned to make sure that these opportunities are shared equitably across the city, that we have appropriate involvement of cultural communities in making the decisions not only about where to have these spaces, but who gets to use them. So that's the meaning for that. Commissioner, I don't have a second amendment, but I just want to put it on the table there, that I think that as we go to implementing these pieces, we are going to need to think about how do we encourage individuals and groups to move out of spaces when they become successful. I know that we found this with affordable housing, that we don't necessarily have appropriate checks and balances, so that once an organization is established and thriving, there needs to be an incentive to them to move somewhere so that the next generation of new makers and artists can move into that property. And so I think throughout the recommendations that will happen through the implementation phase. Just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you. We consider this a friendly amendment, Mayor, but let's take a vote.
We could take it, the testimony first, if you like.
It's your call.
Okay. Either way.
Yeah, I always like to hear testimony just in case.
So, Carlo,
we'll leave it open.
We have a bunch of people signed up. We have about a four-hour hearing to follow, so I would ask you to be as brief as possible. State your support. I don't want to take the drama out of the room, but we do have the votes to adopt the resolution. So give us a perspective maybe you haven't heard. And then, Carla, let's start with the first three.
Okay. Are we going with 3 minutes or two?
Two minutes.
Two.
Sorry. The first three will be Mia O'Connor, Janessa Narciso, and we're going to go with Josh Hecht. Oh.
The two of us.
Welcome. Why don't you all three come forward? Why don't you kick us off, please?
My name is Mia O'Connor-Smith.
My name is Victoria Janessa Narciso.
We are here today representing an entire community of black and brown artists through our collective Deep Underground. It is critical for us to be here today because any plan for accessible and affordable art space in Portland should include us. When I say us, I mean the black and brown artists of Portland.
Our genesis of work that includes speaking to formal art and educational institutions such as Reed College, Lewis and Clark, Disjecta, the Portland Art Museum, and PICA began in a place we call the Lost House.
The Lost House is a house in Northeast Portland that we started, dug in. In truth, it's run down, unloved by the landlord, but we managed to give it life.
Our ideas as a collective were cultivated by a space that we were able to define for ourselves. Creative leadership and having autonomy and agency is crucial to making art. Lost House became all of the things that we didn't or couldn't have access to, like a traditional art gallery, art museum, or music venue. The impact of our art lived to its full potential because we had full creative control.
Murals were up in the house everywhere. We would use the living room as an art gallery.
We used the living room to screen films.
If you walked down into the basement any day, there could be an open mic, film screenings, dance parties, jam sessions.
However, there's irony in the fact that we are losing this house. Lost House is being torn down and replaced with an unaffordable housing development, a space that is not welcoming to our community, a space that would never be available or welcoming to the people that live there now.
But the Lost House is just a place. Places can be torn down as they are. Doug is the people, and the people are resilient, and Doug is evidence of that resilience.
We share this story with you because the Lost House is symbolic of the need that is not being met for affordable art spaces. It is especially not being met for artists of color.
It is symbolic of artists being displaced from a part of the city that is historically Black and rapidly being gentrified.
It is symbolic of a place that was valuable for artists because it belonged to them.
If this is a plan that makes spaces affordable and accessible to artists, then we need access to those spaces. Not only that, we need to be a part of the design and plans of that space.
How are your offices getting this information into the hands of the artists? We would have never found out about this opportunity today if it weren't for PICA. So much of our community can't be here today because this meeting is held at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a work day.
If your goal is to make Portland accessible and affordable to people who choose to live here, what about the people who never left? What about those of us who can't afford to leave?
The Portland art world and creative economy is inaccessible. It is not representative of the art or the creatives in this city.
So we want to know, how will you ensure artists of color are prioritized? How are you taking into consideration that many of the areas that have been economically developed are historically Black neighborhoods? The idea of a creative economy, who does it actually benefit? What do you even mean by affordable?
This is clearly a first step for City Council in what will be a long process that will not be complete or successful unless it is inclusive of artists themselves,
Black and brown artists,
poor artists,
and especially artists that don't fit the mold of your mainstream Portland art world.
Reparations.
Thank you both very much. Very powerful. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry, I can't let that go. And by the way, thank you for the creative presentation. And Carla, thank you for being quick to adapt to that. You came in here and you laid it down, and I appreciate that. And you raised a very valid point, and it's one we actually have had a chance to talk about fairly recently. You asked, how do we ensure access? And I think, you know, this is just my, you know, TED talking here. I believe it's through the leverage that we exert in our partnership with the arts and culture communities here. We're not just supportive through words. We actually are supportive through financial support of the arts in the community, predominantly through the Regional Arts and Culture Council, to which we contribute millions every year. But we also have institutions of arts and culture come before this council and ask for things from time to time. And you are right, both about your comments about historical exclusion from those conversations, and you are right that this group here, you know, we're not solely accountable for the arts and the culture community, but we definitely have some power and influence in that community. And you are right to raise the question overtly. So I just want to say, great. Thank you for being here. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
I'm not sure you mentioned your name for the record. Would you mind doing that?
Victoria Janessa Narciso.
You did. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you,
Commissioner Fritz.
And I would just suggest that Jamie Dunphy, who's standing over here, if you can make sure he has your contact information, because not only are you here, you heard through PICA, you know people, you know who else needs to be involved. And as you said, it's going to be all about the implementation and you being involved. perhaps you two specifically, but also the people that you're currently that you're representing here today. So thank
Deep
you so much.
Carlo, in addition to holding our testifiers to 2 minutes, I'm going to start holding the mayor to 10 seconds in his responses. Welcome, sir.
Well, thanks. Good afternoon. My name is Josh Hecht. I'm the artistic director of Profile Theater. Now in our 21st season, Profile Theater is one of the oldest continuously running theaters in the state. We have a unique mission. We center an entire season around a single playwright whose vision broadens our perspective on the world and deepens our collective compassion. Among our awards are the American Theater Wing's new National Theater Company Award, designed to bring national attention to, quote, the most inspiring and innovative theater companies on our national landscape, end quote, and two awards from Age and Gender Equity in the Arts for our leadership in equity and diversity. In 2016, we launched our Diversity and Inclusion Initiative, a 3-year commitment to producing only the works of women and people of color. In addition to mounting 4 productions each season of work by some of our most important national playwrights, we also bring these writers to Portland for one-of-a-kind public events. We have a deep commitment to community building through our Community Profile program, which last year engaged local military veterans and their families, and this year engages people living with chronic illness and their families, mentoring them in a writing practice to reflect upon and share their experience. The program is 100% free and has been called a life changer by one participant. We do all of this on an annual operating budget of less than $600,000. For a theater company of this size, that means we are always on the edge. Every dollar has a dozen uses, and we count every penny. For the last 5 years, we've made our home as a company in residence at Artist Repertory Theater, where we get performance space, rehearsal space, year-round office space, and community space at a deep subsidy. As you no doubt know, Artist Rep is selling half of the building, and while their leadership and I are hopeful we'll continue a long-term partnership, the demolition and renovation will mean that for a minimum of 2 years, we will need to find another home for all of our space. 2 years is a lifetime for a nonprofit theater company and is nothing less than an existential threat for us. Portland's arts community draws talent from across the country, and in turn, the art we create gives this city a cultural depth that rivals cities 2 or 3 times our size. It's what makes this city one of the fastest growing in the country. We cannot take it for granted. Arts have never survived on the open market, and we ask that you please adopt these recommendations in the report written by Commissioners Fish and Udaly.
Thank you very much.
Next 3, please.
The group from PICA, looks like Roya, Sophie, and Van.
And just a reminder, just name for the record, we don't need your address. The yellow light goes on with 30 seconds. When the red light comes on, please stop talking. Thank you. I don't like being mic police. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for holding this session. I'm Roya Amir Soleimani.
My name is Van Pham.
And I'm Sophie May Hook. We're all from PICA.
Welcome.
It's no mystery that most of our city's artists and art organizations are struggling as the cost of living and operating in Portland increases, a struggle even more pronounced for Black, Brown, Indigenous, POC artists, queer and trans, disabled, poor, unhoused, and immigrant artists. We appreciate that the City Council recognizes the urgency of the situation and is initiating a conversation at the municipal level about how to address the lack of affordable, accessible space for artists and organizations, because art institutions and artists cannot solve this problem alone. We need direct financial investment, subsidy, and advocacy from the city, as well as a voice at the table.
Founded in 1995, PICA for many years operated on a pop-up basis throughout the central city, but in recent years, that model has become unsustainable in a developing Portland. In the last 5 years, we housed our offices in a flex space downtown that would have become impossible for us to afford after the end of our lease, and we would have been desperately looking for a new home like so many other local art nonprofits and artist-run spaces. As some of you know, if not for a 16,000 square foot warehouse at Northeast Hancock and Williams that we were generously leased rent-free for the next 20 years by a visionary local philanthropist, we might too be homeless, literally. This building is a gift to PICA, and in a few short months, we've activated it with countless programs and people, but in a historically Black neighborhood deeply impacted by gentrification, and in a city that lacks enough affordable, accessible, and welcoming art spaces, a building like this is also a responsibility to community and essential to the breadth of artists and cultural organizers in critical need of free or low-cost space to site their programs.
Since we officially moved into our building on Hancock and literally flung our doors open on November 4th of 2017,